Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Intermediate KIX Debugging Techniques, More IPCS for KIX Dump Analysis. Today's presenters are Sarah Bertram and Charlie Weezy. Sarah has been with IBM since 1984 and a member of the KIX Level 2 support team since 1996. She enjoys looking at dumps and working in various areas of KIX. Charlie is a software engineer with application and integration middleware technical support, IBM Software, and has been a member of the KIX Level 2 support team since 2003, where he specializes in KIX web services. Prior to his current role, he has, since 1986, installed and supported KIX in a variety of customer environments. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Sarah and Charlie.
Thank you very much, Joseph. So I'm going to start on slide 2. As you know, this is kind of a follow-on to a presentation that Charlie and I did back in 2007. So we're going to, quickly just kind of go over a review of what we did in that presentation. And then we're going to talk a little bit about some useful IPCS commands that we use quite a bit, setdef and retp. We're then just going to kind of have a hints and tips page where, in any kind of dump that we look at, it's kind of things to remember to keep in the back of our mind. We're then going to have a sample problem that we've come up with, and we're going to utilize our KIX vertexes, looking at those various domains. That's going to be the main focus of our presentation. And then we're going to focus a little bit more on our KIX trace and the options that are available. And then we're going to talk briefly about TS4.1 and some new vertexes that are available with it. And as you know, that's available at the end of this month.
Okay, now on slide 3, please. We wanted to take just a minute to review with you sort of where our starting point is. As Sarah mentioned, this is intended to be an add-on to a presentation that Sarah and I joined together in June of 2007 to present KIX Debugging Basics. So our expectation is that you have some familiarity with that material. If you don't already have that familiarity, the recording of that original presentation is still available along with the handout, and we'd encourage you to make use of that. Some of the topics that were discussed in that previous presentation included setting up and using IPCS to examine your CICS system dumps. We included a review of the different types of dumps that you might look at under IPCS. We talked about some of the common IPCS commands, looked at some CICS-specific verbexit options, some very commonly used ones, at least at level 2 support, and then we took you through an example diagnosis of an application data exception to show how you could use those different verbexits and IPCS commands to diagnose a data exception problem. Okay, and so on slide 4, please. Here's a sheet to talk about some of the topics that we intend to discuss today. We're going to spend a little bit of time on some IPCS commands, setdef, retp, IPL data, and list. We're going to talk very briefly about the GRSQS data option. Most of our time really is going to be spent, in this area at least, on the CICS verbexit options that are listed on this page. Page 5.
So we're going to start out talking about IPCS commands. About an IPCS command, setdef, which stands for set default. One thing here at level 2 that we do quite a bit is we will be browsing storage. We have to list storage to look at various control blocks. We're going to show you the list command later, but when you do the list command, you can specify a length, or if you don't specify a length, it'll default to whatever is specified in your IPCS default. Now, I've highlighted the length here. The default is 4. Only 4 bytes of data will be shown. Now, what we use this command for is to change that length default to hex 1000 or 4096. And again, that just saves us time so that whenever I'm displaying storage, I will always get a hex 1000 bytes. On slide 6, you will see I've given you the actual command. It would be IP space setdef. Space length, and then you can either put decimal 4096 or hex 1000, and you can set whatever length you would like, you know, that would be useful to you. There's other options that you can also set, but we typically do the length most of the time. Moving on to slide 7. Here's another command that we find very useful in looking at dumps. It's actually an ISTS command, so it's not just used in IPCS. And it's called RETP, which stands for the Retrieve Pop-Up command. Basically, it causes a panel to be displayed with the last 20 commands that are in this command retrieval stack. By default, it's going to remember all commands, basically because there's a length or a minimum number of characters that you can specify that of the command to be remembered, and that defaults to a value of 1. Now, since we tend to issue some very large IPCS commands, I tend to want to only remember ones that, let's say, are greater than 5 or even 10 characters in length. So I didn't realize that we could go and change this minimum value. And the way you do it is when you do enter RETP, you would go select options. And then option brings up three choices. And the first choice is to set the minimum number of characters saved in the retrieve stack. And on slide 8, you will see when you select one that you can change this number of characters. As I said, it defaults to 1. I show you a value of 5 here. You may even want to make it 10 so that you only remember the larger commands that we tend to enter. So again, those both are just useful IPCS-related commands that make our job a little simpler.
Okay. On page 9, another IPCS command that we sometimes find handy is the IPL data. If you're not on the command screen, you'd preface that with an IP, short for IPCS. But the IPL data command will display the last IPL date and time, the ZOS release, and other related information. So it's a report about the IPL process. It contains information about that IPL and carries almost the same information as the display IPL info system command. Now, in putting this presentation together, Sarah and I were trying to add on, trying to continue on from our debugging basics presentation. This is part 2 of what we envision as perhaps a 3-part series. If you have suggestions or requests for additional material that you'd like to see us cover, either in the realm of IPCS commands or more specifically with the KIC group exit, we'd encourage your comments and would attempt to tailor our presentation towards your needs.
Moving on to slide 10, one of the first questions whenever we get a dump from customers is, you know, we want to know if it's a complete dump. When a dump is taken, a system dump, message IEA 611 or IEA 911 is put out, and that indicates if it's a complete or partial dump. Typically, we do not have the log showing that message. So we have to, you know, figure out if the dump taken was complete from the dump itself. And so this slide is basically showing you the command that you can figure this out. The IEA 911 and 611 message contain the system dump reason codes, okay? So if it's complete, the reason codes are all 0. But if it's partial, the reason codes will have a non-zero value that you can then look up. So to verify this, we are going to use the IPCS list command. There I have it on the slide. It's a list easy zero period. Now the reason the period's there is it tells IPCS that this is an address versus a literal or symbol that was equated to. So we're actually listing location easy zero in block zero for a length of 16 bytes. And we're strictly wanting to see the 4 full words at that location. And in this example, you can see down below the address 000EZ0, and the third full word has an 08 for the first byte. If you go to the messages and codes for ZOS and look up either the IEA 611 or 911, and then go down and work on that third word, you'll learn that the dump data set was full and that more data needed to be dumped. So this was a partial dump.
So this screen actually refers a little bit back to the set depth as well. You can see here that Sarah has specified a length of 10, and if she hadn't specified that length and allowed the default to occur, the length would have been 4, unless she had done the set depth that she'd illustrated, in which case she would have had 4,096 bytes displayed for this list command. Here she knew she wanted 4 forwards, and so she specified the hex 10 length to get just those 4 forwards to look at. Moving on to slide 11, sometimes we hear from customers, my dump takes too long to capture. And one of the interesting things that we've found that can reduce the time to capture a dump is to remove the FData GRFQ option from a dump. That's the MVS-related contention information related to global resource serialization. This option is unnecessary if your problem scope is limited to a single KIX region and doesn't involve other regions or other external systems. For example, DB2, RACF, a coupling facility, or the logger, if you think that a problem that you're trying to examine may interact with some of those other subsystems and may be involved in the problem, you wouldn't want to remove the GRFQ option. However, for MVS to resolve and to chase down those links related to GRFQ can sometimes increase the length of your dump time. Now, it's interesting to note that this FData option is only something that you could specify if you were taking a console dump. When you request CICS to take a dump, either through the master terminal or if CICS itself initiates a dump, it will specify the FData options that are appropriate for that system dump. Interestingly, GRFQ would not be included in that list. But if you're taking your own console dumps and you find that those dumps are running on long, if it's not a risk to remove GRFQ, you may find some improvement there. Let's go on to slide 12 now, please. For those of you that were in the debugging basics class or session that we presented in 2007, you'll recognize this chart. It has been updated now to include some of the additional verb axes that have been introduced in 3.2 and in the newest and latest 4.1 release to come out. We find this a very handy cheat sheet, if you will, to keep at our desk just as a reminder of the different areas to look at, sort of the interaction within CICS. Now, we're not going to flip or go to the next slide just yet, but I wanted to note for you that there is a notes page associated with this that will describe the keyword and the different options to use. You'll notice most of these verb axes have options 0, 1, 2, and 3. 0 says exclude this verb axis from the list, from the reporting. 1 says give me a summary only. 2 says give me the detail only without a summary. And 3 says give me both the summary and the detail control block. Now, I've also highlighted several of the verb exit keywords or verb exit options that we'll be discussing in this presentation. Off to the right, you will see in parentheses the release number where some of the newer verb exit options were introduced. Okay, we're going to flip quickly past slide 13 now and on to slide 14 and talk a little bit about shortcuts. Shortcuts is a little bit of a misnomer here. Hints and tips is a little bit closer, but the idea behind this slide is that there are a lot of areas within CICS that sort of interact, and a problem that appears in one area may in fact be caused by something not entirely, but maybe a little bit obscurely different from the problem that you thought that you were looking at. It's especially a problem that we face here with CICS Level 2 support, where occasionally the problems that a customer will report are not the underlying problems that are actually causing the observed problem within CICS.
One of the questions we typically will ask in a dump is, you know, is KIX healthy? And what we mean by that is, you know, you could have a dump or a KIX region that's not getting much CPU or possibly in a tight loop where, you know, only one task is running versus a dump where, you know, KIX is healthy, people are able to log on, but, you know, they're still having problems with some of the transactions. And one of the things we do to try to answer that question, one of the little, I guess you could say, hints or tips, is we kind of have a main terminal control program task that should run, you know, every few seconds. I mean, really probably every second. And we kind of look at that like it's the heartbeat task in KICS. And so in a dump, we will typically go and look in the dispatcher domain, and we're going to show you this later, but we're going to go focus on that task, and typically it'll be suspended, and we'll want to verify that the suspend time is very close to the dump time. And again, that's just kind of a letting us know that, okay, you know, if he's running, that kind of tells me that KICS is healthy. You know, another type of problem we see a lot is sympathy sickness. And what we mean about that is, you know, many regions are now interconnected, TOR, AORs, FORs. And you might see a problem, and they might provide us a dump, let's say, in a TOR. But when we start looking at it, you know, we notice all the tasks are in, let's say, IR link weight. In those cases, the real problem is on the connected region, you know, and typically we would need a dump in that region, and so the TOR is really almost a victim of some problem that's occurring elsewhere.
Some of the other areas that we see problems that are sometimes overlooked kind of get by us, and then we come back around to it. Not too often with SOS, but it's certainly, if you see a short on storage in your system, you want to look pretty closely at that and certainly try to avoid that at all costs. If you see unusually large allocations, for example, TSQs, some of those problems can start to affect your performance in a region if they become really grossly or abnormally large. Also, max task and T class can cause problems that appear as an unrelated issue or as a problem with a specific application. When you take a closer look at the region as a whole, you start to see that perhaps max task or T-class are playing a factor in some of the problems that you're observing. So we like to keep these in mind just as, I guess, keep it in the back of your head. If we find ourselves in the XM verb exit option, we're going to take a look at max task and T-class, and we'll probably even take a venture out there early on and dump analysis just to make sure that there's not something kind of getting by us. Okay, on to slide 15. I'm going to talk a little bit about the sample problem that we're using to illustrate some additional verb exits in this presentation. The sample problem that we chose is one where we're assuming that the customers are going to complain about hung tasks. The problem described to us was that they have many transactions that seem to be hung up. They normally experience sub-second response times. They've identified the transactions or the problem area as transactions that start with TT1, anything in the fourth character, and they're all the people that have advised us of this problem have indicated that these are all part of the same application. We know that CICS is still functional when we looked at the problem because, in fact, we were able to get into CEMT, so max task at that point wasn't an issue, obviously, and we actually just requested the dump from the master terminal command, CEMT perform snap. Now, you'll see the title, Why Are My TT1 Asterisk Tasks Hung, is going to show up in the dump as well. And that can be handy just in terms of identifying positively that this is the dump that I mean to be looking at when I'm diagnosing this particular problem. In a very active, busy production environment, you may have a lot of dumps to sort through, and any way that you can identify those would be to your benefit.
Moving on to slide 16. So when we get a dump, one of the first things we like to verify is, you know, what dump am I looking at? Kind of like what Charlie was just saying, you know, am I looking at the dump that was intended? And so we like to get an idea of, you know, what is the dump for? You know, it could be a console dump or it could be a system-generated dump. Whenever you get into our verb exits at the top, there's a dump summary information if KICS or took the dump or it was requested by CEMT. For console dump, there will be no dump summary. So one of the first things we'll look at is to see if there was a dump summary. In this example, I'm showing you that, yes, there is a dump summary. The dump code is MT0001, and that indicates that the dump was requested by a user of the CEMT task. Notice it also gives you the local time of the dump, which we are very concerned with knowing the time of the dump. And the title is listed there, which again is very useful, as Charlie pointed out, you know, that proves that's the dump I'm supposed to be looking at. We'll also need to see the GMT time. Now, notice the dump summary gives you the local time, but in CICS, we have different domains that will put out the time in GMT. So I also need to get that information. And the simplest way to do that is using a command that we discussed in the debugging basics. It's status system, STSYS. And again, we just do this on every dump and go down and take note of the local and GMT time, especially in this case, since we have a hang, we're probably going to want to compare and remember the local and GMT time when we get the dispatcher. Moving on to slide 17. So now we're in our dump. We know we have a dump taken by the mass to CMT, and we know they complained about a transaction, TT1 asterisk, being hung. So one place you might want to start is in the XM domain, Transaction Manager. In this case, because they're hung, you know, things that come to mind are to check for max task, you know. And so anyway, that's what we're showing you here. We went to XM equals 3, and when you look at the summary information right at the top, it tells you the number of max task setting. In this case, there's a max task setting of 32, and then it also tells you that we're not currently at max task. Now, if you go down further in XM, there's a max task summary information, and what we find useful there is it will tell you the current number of active tasks, okay, just to get an idea if we're close to max task or not. Obviously, in this case, I only have 6 active user tasks, so, you know, max task does not seem to be an issue. And again, on 18, which is a note page, we're just saying why we're starting with XM. And again, it's just because of the max task and hang situation is why we elected to start here.
I would say probably in most cases we would normally start with the dispatcher summary, the DS domain, when looking at a hang type of situation. The other reason that we really wanted to look at XM in this case, or take you through it, was so that we could see the task and the task numbers that seem to be in the system that are involved in the hang at the time that we're looking at the dump. Now, on slide 19, we're showing some detailed information. We're still in XM equals 3 verb asset, so that we're looking at the transaction manager detail. And finally, we get to see the TT1 asterisk transactions. There are 5 of them that are active in the system at the time of the dump. Task number is 2347 consecutively through 2351. Then we see, at least on this display, 3 tasks that are at T-class status on a class named MyClass. So that's kind of interesting to note. It's not particularly germane to the problem, but it's nice to have sort of a view of what's going on in the region overall. Now, at the bottom of this listing, we've included a listing or a display of the CEMT task, 2361, which is in fact the transaction that requested this very dump that we're looking at now. On slide 20, since we saw some tasks that were at T-class, we decided to go down and take a look at the T-class summary. And we see the 3 tasks that we noted on the previous slide, task number 2352, 2353, and 2354. There are another 3 tasks that are shown here as well. Now, the queue start time is mildly interesting, showing us that it wasn't a burst of work, but really these transactions came in over a brief but, you know, not a tight period of time. Not terribly interesting in this dump, but if you're looking at a dump that involves perhaps 100 or a couple hundred tasks that are running, and you're trying to diagnose a T-class situation, it can be helpful to note if perhaps you encountered T-class because of a rush of work that hit your region all at once, or whether this is something that built over time. And noting the queue start times can help you to gauge that condition.
Moving on to slide 21. And as Charlie said, this is where we spend a lot of time in the dispatcher domain. It's one of probably the most referred to domains. In this case, you know, some things to point out is we're going to be focusing on column resource type, then resource name, and time of suspend. They're kind of in the middle of the slide. The one thing I want to point out before we get into our task is I mentioned the terminal control task is kind of our heartbeat. And I've highlighted, he's the first one in bold that has a resource type of TCP underscore norm and a resource name of DFH ZDFP. And again, it's just always good to make note that that time is very close to the time of the dump, and it is in this case. So, you know, just an indication that things are healthy. Now, with what we learned in XM, you know, Charlie was able to actually find task numbers that we want to focus on. We've seen many dumps with hundreds and hundreds of tasks in Dispatcher, and it can be very overwhelming to know where do I focus on. So what's nice about going to XM in this case is Charlie has given me task numbers, you know, 2347 through 2351, which I can search on in Dispatcher. And where you see the task number is going to be on your display, the far right column. It's in packed format, so the task number is followed by a C. And we have those underlined over there. So, you know, basically we do a find on these task numbers we're interested in, and then you would shift to the left to try to understand what, you know, how long they've been suspended, and if they have been suspended for a while, what they are suspended on with their resource type and resource name. So in this case, you know, these do appear to definitely be hung because they were suspended about 8 minutes ago, which is an eternity in a TIC world. When you look at the resource name and type, it's an NQ, appears to be an NQ problem, and the exec STRN, if you look that up in our manual, has involved with an exec CICS NQ command being performed. So, you know, this kind of confirms the symptoms that the customer saw in that these transactions have been sitting out there for 8 minutes, and as Charlie pointed out with the XM, the other, because it's T-class, the other transactions are not able to start. So on page 22, we just tried to basically go through and have a note page about what we went through on that screen. Really don't have anything else to add there.
Okay, on slide 23, now we're going to dig a little bit further and see if we can understand what these NQs are about. The caption or the subset of the NQ equals 3 vertex, if it's shown below, gives us the name of the queue, who owns it, and if there are any tests that are waiting on that NQ argument. And this helps us to really identify or break apart what the NQ problem is in this particular case. We can see from the table that NQ1 is owned by task number 2347, and that NQ1 argument has a single waiter, one task that's waiting for it, and that's transaction TT13, transaction 2348. Now, if you look at the next NQ argument, NQ2, that shows that the owner on the first line is task number 2348, and that NQ has one waiter as well, task number 2347. As the arrows help to illustrate, what we have here is really a classic deadly embrace scenario, where task 1 owns NQA and is waiting for B, Task 2 owns B and is waiting for A. Now, the way that you code around this, or the way you get this type of problem out of your application coding in general, is that your applications that use the same NQ arguments should NQ against them in the same order. And as you can see in this example, if both tasks 2347 and 2348 decided to go after these NQ arguments in the same order, whichever order they choose, let's assume alphabetical in this case, NQ1 and then NQ2, then there wouldn't be any deadly embrace situation that would occur. You can also see from the chart, as we've noted in the notes above, the 2349 task doesn't own any NQs and is just totally a victim of the hang. Now, once again, in some of the more complicated dumps, this can be a little bit hairy to unravel. But the principle is the same. You find out who the owner is, and you find out who's waiting, and the idea behind a deadly embrace is you're trying to find that one of those waiters also owns an NQ argument that the owner of that NQ is trying to get, causing the deadly embrace. Now we're going to dig deeper into the specific task activity to try to understand a little bit more about it. And at this point in the diagnosis, we know the problem is being caused more or less by the application coding and the fact that there was an NQ, a deadly embrace that was really coded into the application, if you will. If you'll advance to slide 24, we're going to show you a handy command called APS. This is a verb exit that gives you the same type of information that you'd see with the AP keyword, but where the AP keyword will display summary and detailed information for all of the tasks in your system. APS allows you to focus like a laser on a single task ID. So we're going to look at first 2347, which we know owned NQ1 and was waiting for NQ2. And when we look here, we can start to focus first on what were the commands that were most recently done by this transaction. Looking at the SYSI ID, as you can see highlighted, the code 1204 is the EIB FN, the exec interface block function code, which you can look up in our manuals. And when we look that up, we see that the 1204 code is an NQ request. Now, the SYSI IB code, the 1204, is different from the EIB. We keep separate control blocks for the system EIB and the EIB, and the difference, at least in this context, is that the SYSI IB code represents the code or the command that was currently being requested that is currently in process. Now, when the SYSI IB and the EIB commands match, that basically informs you that whatever the most recent CACF command was requested has also completed. The fact that these two codes are different in our case tells us that the NQ is still in process, but it also tells us what the previous code was in the EIB coding. The 1004 code, as you'll see in a moment, is interpreted as a delay request. Now, the other things of interest to note here, in the EIUS control block, the exec interface user structure, at offset 50 is the address of the high-level language save area. Now, we've also done an IPCS locate command or a list command to show the data that's at that address where the registered save areas and such are. So with the IP space L space 15431778 command, we can display the most recent high-level, or the current high-level save, high-level language save area information. At offset Charlie into that control block is the register 14 value at the time that exec CICF command was issued. And by that command, I mean the one that's listed in the SYSI ID control block, the NQ request. Now to the notes page on slide 25. This just really recaps some of the information that we've discussed here. SYSI ID is NQ. The EIB at offset 1 Baker is delay. The EIUS points us into the high-level language save area, which shows us registered at the time of the current exec command.
Now moving on to slide 26, we're doing the same APS command, except we're going to look at the other task involved in our deadly embrace, task 2348. Very similar looking. We have a system EID, again, showing the NQ because that's what's hung up right now, that's unable to complete. In this case, the previous command that was successful for this particular task happened to be a write QTS. Again, you know, same technique. You go to the EIUS plus 50, and again, that's going to be where CICS has saved off the application registers when it gave up control issuing this NQ command. And again, these registers can be very useful to the application programmer if they need to dig into their code. But what we like to provide our customers, or we think useful, is the actual application program, and that gets back to offset Charlie into the RSA, and you know, eventually we'll get to the program name on later charts. And hopefully that'll be useful to the application programmers as to understanding, you know, their NQ logic. Moving on to slide 27, again, I just reiterate that, but there's something additional in this particular case. Task 2348 happens to be executing in a COBOL program. And what's really another added feature about the APS keyword is it will format the language environment details, okay? If it's not a COBOL program or an LE environment, then, of course, there would be none of that would be displayed. I believe Charlie's program was an assembler program, so the APS would not have anything. But moving on to slide 28, we're giving you a brief snippet. When you go down into the APS, you can see at the top, it, the actual R verb exit, issues the LE verb exit to get out all types of information from an LE environment. One of the things we like to look at are the runtime options. You know, we don't see it that much anymore, but, you know, the old WS Clear, which then turned into the storage operand in the LE environment, a lot of times, if that's not set properly, you can get some garbage output. And anyway, this is a kind of an easier way for us to go and sometimes see that LE runtime option. And it also gives some other LE control block DSAs as well as traceback information that can be useful in other types of problems we tend to debug. So we just wanted to make note of that additional information that you can get from the APS keyword.
Okay, on slide 29, here's a summary of some of the information that we found out from my previous slides. We did find the register 14 addresses, that is to say the return addresses for our application programs when they made their execchs calls, for tasks 2347 and 2348 that are involved in the deadly embrace. We can format our dump using with the loader domain, the loader verb exit, LD equals 3, and then search for the addresses reflected in those register 14 values in order to find what program we were actually executing in at the time of the dump. So normally I'll do a search on the first four digits of the address. Sometimes you need to cut that down to look for the first three bytes. You won't find something with the first four bytes, that you just sort of skips over that number because of the offsets and the way where the programs are actually occupying storage. But you need to limit the amount of the data that you're actually using to search for that address in order, just you're looking to get in the neighborhood of where that program was loaded so you can figure out from those addresses what program was being executed, and you can then compute what offset you were actually executing in the program and report that back to your application programmers for diagnosis. So in our case, we do a search for quote space 9631, which in fact both tasks have in common that same prefix address, if you will. And we get down into a part of the loader domain listing that shows us the program storage map and list programs that start with CL2P something. Well, we can scan down that list, and we can see pretty quickly that task 2347 is executing somewhere in program CL2PAX12. We can further determine that task 2348 is executing at some offset within program CL2PC013. And that's just narrowing the scope and figuring out where that address lies in that contiguous storage map, if you will. Now, on to the next slide. I've just taken a moment to help you to see that, and if you're not experienced with this already, the Windows Calculator app actually has a hex function to it. I think most people are probably aware of it. If you're not, it's very easy to bring up the scientific calculator that includes hex, decimal, octal, and binary options simply by clicking on View and then select Scientific. Then you can do the hexadecimal math to subtract the entry point from the register 14 address to compute what the offset from the entry point is where the execchs command was requested that got us into this NQ, this deadly embrace situation.
Moving on to slide 31, this is kind of taking a sidestep from diagnosing our problem. But it's, again, a real useful IPCS command that was, or a function that was introduced in ZOS 1.8. So right now we're just talking about program storage. We're looking at, you know, getting down into the application code. And sometimes, probably more for like a program check problem, okay, versus what we're dealing with now, we have to go find the family instruction. And, you know, probably all of us have that little, used to be green card, yellow card, and white cards now, that we go use, and we can break down the opcodes manually and back up to try to find out failing instructions. Well, in ZOS1-8, they introduced this instruction attribute on the list command, which is really nice. It basically, if you're looking at code, as I said, more for a program check, and want to see the instruction flow, you simply do an IP list command of the area, the program stores, whatever address, and type I or INSTR after it. When you do that, you will get this display at the bottom, and it's just wonderful. It shows you the address it's displaying, it shows you the machine instruction, and then it actually shows you and disassembles it for you and tells you it's a load address or multiple or immediate. And it's just really, really useful for other types of problems that we look at. And you might find it useful if you're ever looking into program storage. One thing I'll note is you can specify a length, again, on these IP list commands. Or, if you don't, it will default to whatever your length is in your set def command. So anyway, that's kind of a side note.
Okay. On slide 32... we're going to take you into the PG domain with a PG equals 3. This is really just going to confirm for us what we've already seen in the APS and LD displays. But in addition, it's going to show us one of the new CICS TS 3.1 features. It'll show us container usage as well. So from this display, we can see both tasks 2347 and 2348. We'll start with 2347. This is showing us that we started at link level 1, this is just about halfway down on the screen, program CL2PA012. That's the program that initially got control from CICS. We're currently executing above that at level 2, which indicates that our application program has done an exec CICS link at some point. The link may or may not have been done to that program. If you do a transfer control, you're still at link level 2, and it would just replace the program name. But what's interesting here is that we also see the channels and containers that are being used by the program. Now, you can see at level 1 that we have channel 012_channel with a couple of containers associated with that channel. At link level 2, for program CL2PAX12, there are actually two different channels in use. There's 012_channel, which we see is the same channel and, in fact, involving or using the same addresses as the channel shown below at link level 1. These are, in fact, the exact same data areas that we're using. But what's good to note is that the program at link level 2 is aware of them because link level 1, when it issued the link, specified the channel that should be passed to link level 2 on the link request. And then for task 2348 below that, we see that we're just executing at link level 1. There's the program name, CL2PC013. There is no container usage, so that information is left off. Okay, on slide 33, fun with trace. We're not kidding. Okay, maybe fun is a little bit of an overstatement, but there can be a lot of really good and useful information that you can drag out of trace. Now, anybody that's spent any time with trace knows that there's a trace entry for everything. My goodness, there are all kinds of trace entries out there. And so to get any meaning, to really mine information out of it, it helps to be handy at being able to craft different verbexes or, in the Bash job, the different control cards that specify what kinds of trace that you want to display. In the verb exit under IPCS, we have the same capability that we have with like an auth trace format to specify additional tracing options with the TRS keyword. Now, we talked about TR in the debugging basics class that we did, or session that we did in 2007. The TRS is a new topic for this series, if you will, and we have a couple examples there where you can specify task ID or type trace that you want to follow. So these are very useful tools. Now, we're going to use this as an example to focus further on the behavior of our task in this deadly embrace.
So on slide 34, again, just showing you, we're going to now just want to see all the activity at abbreviated level versus a full, TR equal 1, for task ID 2347. And again, what's nice about that, in a real busy system where you'd have, you know, lots going on, this is just going to show you all the task entries for this particular task. And, you know, one thing to note, you can see the initial link, the initial program that was linked to, that we also saw in the PG domain, was CL2PA012. Further down, you know, you can get information and see that now he's linked to CL2PAX12 and also passed a channel on that link request.
So one of the ways that I like to use these trace tools is to, exactly as Sarah said, all of the trace entries for a certain specific task, and then I'll identify the trace entries that I want to see not only for this task, but for all the tasks that are in my system. In this example, I decided I wanted to focus on just the link commands in the trace for the task 2347, 2348. We could even do this, the link for all of the command or all of the transactions. In this case, we're really interested in the deadly embrace for those two tasks, so we're going to specify task ID equals open paren 2347-2348 close paren. In addition, if you specify that type trace options that I show listed there, SM1101, DS0002, etc., it will actually show you all of the links, including the initial link and any subsequent links that are done by your application program, and really give you a map of the way the application is behaving. On slide 35, is a slightly different example. Now, this is an abbreviated trace listing that's just showing us the exec CICS activity. Now, at level 2, we really like to see EI1-2. In an EI equals 1 trace display, you really only get the AP00EZ1 EIP entry. You wouldn't get the EZ160 and EZ161 trace entries. And by not getting those entries in the trace, you lose a lot of detail about the specific command that was requested. In other words, with EI equals 1, you'd know an NQ was done, but you wouldn't know what the NQ argument was. And as you can see in this listing, we know not only the NQ, but the detail on the NQ, the delay, the write queue, any sort of invoke web service, all of those are out there in detail with EI 1-2.
Moving on to 36, we're just showing you, up to now we've just shown you abbreviated trace. And as Charlie said, you know, we really do like the EI 1-2 specified. And all we're trying to show you here is an excerpt from full tracing with EIP, you know, entries, the EIP NQ and then the EI level 2, which is the AP EZ160. And there again, you can see a lot more detail, including the COBOL statement, if it's a COBOL program, from where that was issued. Another thing that full tracing or TR2 gives you is return addresses. On that very first entry, I have underlined the RET address of 96310 Fox Bay Grable, and that corresponds directly to the R14 that we found in the RSA from the AP domain. So again, just another place to get some information.
Okay. On slide 37, we're summarizing now for you our problem that we've attempted to tear apart for you in demonstration. Our approach has led us to review the tasks that were active in the system. We looked at the dispatcher. That led us into the NQ domain, NQ equals 3, where we saw the classic deadly embrace. But we've also used it as a platform to show off some of the other verb exit options that are available to us.
Moving on to 38, so now we just want to take a little more time to focus on trace. And again, there's a lot of power with the TRS option. And again, in today's environment, you know, tracing can be overwhelming and can be too much. We have many TCDs that can be running simultaneous, and trying to work through all of those can be very tricky. So this TRS is a way, you know, to really try to hone in on what you want to use or to focus on. Moving on to page 39, we're just actually showing you the different options that you can specify. These can all be found in the operations and utilities. You can focus on, as Charlie has shown, a specific trace point. You can do a certain term ID if you're interested in that, a time range, a focus on a TRAN ID or even timestamp within a trace. So it's very powerful.
Okay, on slide 40, I've provided some other samples. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about these, but you can actually basically invent your own. I've come up with these just as a means of looking through some of the different problems that I've worked on that have come in here in the level 2. So if you want to know, for example, what transactions and task numbers that were attached during the trace, you can specify those trace points XM1101 and DS0002. You can find out what programs that you linked or transferred control to and returned from, and basically do a map as we showed earlier. You can show how the containers used and even the contents of the containers with the example shown at the third bullet. And finally, if you wanted to look at your socket data, all the socket sends and receives, the data that is actually flowing across TCP/IP, you could do that with a type trace SO0201-0202. Now on slide 41, now we're going to flip into some of the new options that are related to VerbX that are going to be available with CICSTS 4.1, available at the end of this month. There are some enhanced dump capabilities that we're going to talk about in further detail on upcoming slides, as well as some new domains and VerbX options that are also listed on that earlier cheat sheet that we showed you.
On slide 42, this is one that we really like. When we get dumps, we typically have requested trace. And when we start looking at trace, we might say, oh, shoot, there's only exception tracing. Or, you know, we're not sure if they specified EI1-2. And we would have to go into our control blocks and kind of dig to answer those questions. And what's nice is in 4.1 now, when you display the TR, go to the TR domain, you're going to have this little sample here laid out where it's going to tell us, one, is the master system trace flag on or off, and then it's going to actually show us what was specified for each component in trace. And again, that's just going to save us time and is very, we find very useful. Moving on to slide 43, another area that's been enhanced deals with user exits. If you've ever been to the UEH domain, you know, it has information or control blocks out there about the various user exits, but to really understand which exits and what the exit program names are was a bit difficult. Again, it requires you to have to go digging and displaying. And now, in this example, as you can see, underneath the user exit table, we'll actually lay out and tell you the user exit, the program name, and the entry point for that program.
Hey, slide 44. One of the features that I'm really looking forward to with the new 4.1 release, and I think a lot of customers will really appreciate this as well, are the resource signatures. Now, you're going to see this not only in CEDA displays, but also in the dump. And when we format a particular resource definition for you, for example, the pipeline that I have demonstrated there, we're going to get resource signature information associated with that pipeline that'll show us when it was defined, when it was actually installed in the region, and what user ID was associated with the latest change to that resource definition. That will also apply to dynamically defined and installed resources, as I've illustrated down with the URI map example, that shows the change agent and install agent as dynamic. There's still a change time and an install time, but they're related to the dynamic install now. And that brings us to the summary. On slide 45, we've taken you through a lecture on some of the IPCS commands. We've provided some hints and tips and things to try to keep in mind as you're going through a dump. We've talked quite a bit about a variety of CICS VerbX commands and some additional options on some of the commands that we spoke about in our previous presentation. We've discussed some additional CICS trace options and hopefully have equipped you with looking at your own traces and figuring out how to mine the information that you're interested in out of your own traces. And then we've talked very briefly about some of the new IPCS VerbX capabilities that will be available shortly with CICSTS 4.1. Let's see, on slides 46 and 47, we'll rest at 46 for a second. We've included a list of references that we've used in preparing this presentation. And on 47 are a listing of some additional product resources related to CICS that we thought that you might find helpful. And now I'd like to pass the presentation back to Joseph for his remarks.
Thank you, Charlie and Sarah, for a great presentation. At this point, Anna, we would like to open the line for questions.
We have our first question. It comes from Bobby Jordan with GEICO. Your line is open.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Bobby. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Good.
I noticed that you're putting out the who changed the resource for the pipeline.
Yes.
Was that done for other resources, such as program terminals and
that's
whatnot?
Yes, good question. And that's been done for everything. All of our resources now have that new signature.
So we'll see that in the dump.
In the dump and online.
I know. Online. I knew about online, but I didn't know about the dump.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You bet.
Okay, our next question comes from Vinish Mosco. Your line is open.
Hi. Is there a printable version of the 2007 basic lecture?
There should be at the link that is in the presentation on page 3. There should be a link both to the a printable, I think it's a PDF file actually, as well as the audio that goes along with that.
Okay, thanks.
Yes.
Okay, so no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Anna. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.